We're heading now to an old hunter's hut at the base of the Aorangi Mountains, not far from the southern tip of the North Island. It's early morning, raining and still dark, when we meet conservationist and winemaker Clive Payton. He's been planting trees on his bush block for 20 years now. And this is where the plan for a bird highway reaching across the valley to the Remutaka Range all started.
As the sun comes up, the birds just explode into song. It's amazing. I don't get up early enough, often enough to really appreciate it. And it has increased over the years here. I've been here for nearly 20 years and it's been quite a change. I don't really know how strong that is. It's just an assumption without scientific fact. But
this was just paddock before?
Oh, there were a lot of trees here, but the whole, lower level was completely cleaned out. It had been grazed with cattle forever. Behind us here, there's a beautiful stand of old matai and titoki. This titoki here would probably be 1,000 years old. And there's an incredible kohia vine running up through it, which would be about the same age, I think. There's bits and pieces of the old forest here, and as the sun comes up, you'll see, it's returning very quickly now. The Aorangi Forest is right behind us, so there's, a lot of cross-pollination, of course.
What are the birds you can hear now, Clive?
That's Turi at the moment.
And what else do you have here? What are the birds?
Bell birds, pigeons, of course. They're a little bit quieter.
The kereru.
It's true here, the pigeons feed in, particularly in late winter, early spring, and there's always a lovely coo-coo here. But
it's so wet. I'm going to just walk back to the small hut here, the old hunter's hut, and have a chat to Clive. Out of the rain.
That little piece at the front is the original hut that was built in 1964, and I met the guy who built it, and one of the things that spurred me on was that he said when he was building it, he could hear kiwi. Now, he was an intelligent man, so I believe him. Kiwi are very distinctive, of course.
Have you heard kiwi since you've been here?
Oh, no. There's no. There aren't any here, but they could have.
They could very well have been.
Yes, they could have
been. Back in the day.
Yeah, he was adamant. He had heard. So that really spurred me on to bring back the bush.
How many trees do you think you've planted here?
Oh, I'm close to 80,000 trees now. So it's a combination of native trees and ground-durable eucalypts, which we use in the vineyards, of course.
Clive's 120-hectare block has inspired an even bigger scheme, the Tonganui Corridor Project.
Basically to help and encourage farmers to plant on their riversides, on their spare bits of land, and it's really starting to happen.
And the idea is to bring the birds right across from the Rimutakas, from the Wellington
yes,
area?
Yes, that's the long term, but also to change, gradually try and change the way people look at their land rather than just having deserts of grass. The long-term vision is really sort of connecting Wellington or Zealandia, if you like, and other projects with the Aorangis.
These trees here are now 2 years old, so that's a nice little cabbage tree from 2020, and then you got a kānuku here.
I'm Aaron Donges, and I'm the operations manager for the Aorangi Restoration Trust, mainly focusing on the Tonganui Corridor project. The big scheme was to establish a continuous native corridor from the Aorangi Ranges across the valley to the Remutaka Ranges in the lower Wairarapa Valley. And so to do that, we're trying to establish native corridors.
There goes the sheep truck.
Native corridors on landowners' private landowners' property along the whole valley to one day link up to create that corridor. So the particular corridor we're standing at the moment now has been planted along the edge of the Waihora River, and it's a three-year project which will stretch from the Lake Furry Road right through to the Ruamahanga River. And also this project is a collaboration between landowner, Greater Wellington Regional Council and the Arangi Restoration Trust. At this stage, we're trying to fund around 72 to 75,000 trees per year for 2021-22, and then we'll have slightly smaller planting in 2023. But we are hoping that it'll be a long-term project, and we will just keep, with the buy-in from landowners, we will just keep going until we get the corridor established.
How has it been so far with the landowners? What sort of buy-in have you had?
We've had very good buy-in from landowners, and we are finding landowners are becoming more and more open to the idea of retiring parts of land into natives. And also, like this planting we're standing in now at the Waihora, this came out of ex-pine forest, and the landowner decided he wanted to plant it back into natives instead of pine. So we are starting to see that landowners are looking at natives as another option, and that may be due to just wanting to have some diversity on their property, or also carbon credits is another scheme that the landowners are using to get some costs back.
Because it is more expensive to go down the native route.
Yeah, so natives are considerably more expensive than planting in pine, but obviously with pine there is harvesting costs and pruning costs and other costs involved in that. But obviously with natives aren't a harvestable crop, so they're a long-term crop really.
So where are we standing in terms of the corridor and what it's going to look like in future? How far along the corridor are we?
We're pretty close to the Arangi, so we've got quite a long way to go from here to get over the Remutaka ranges. But like, if the more buy-in that we can have from landowners in the future, and the more smaller blocks we have all over the valley, the more likely that one day, you know, we will have that continuous link right across the valley.
And what are some of the issues that landowners are faced with when they say, nah, don't want to be involved?
The biggest probably factor that we find with landowners is cost, really. It's not free for landowners to do this kind of work. They are still having to come up with close to two-thirds of the total cost. And depending on the site, the topography, what the project's going to look like and what needs to be done to get it ready for planting, you know, those costs can be quite considerable.
But you do have volunteers that help out?
We have had some volunteers help with some planting, and also we try to get the landowners involved as much as they can in the task, whether it be planting or helping prepare the site or fencing costs or something like that.
Are these landowners that you've got on board already, are they more the greeny types?
No, definitely not. We've got a pretty broad spectrum of landowners that are buying, and some, you know, like the one we're standing on now, he's probably one of the largest dairy farmers in the Wairarapa, and we have right down to, you know, the son and mum that are running a farm. We have, so over the board, I'd say no, it's not just the greeny type, it's, you know, very conventional farmers right through to the sort of more greeny type.
What is the optimum amount of land that a landowner should put into this if it's going to work for you?
Well, we assess that site to site. So, you know, some sites are in quite a strategic area for the corridor project, or might be, say, surrounding a nice lagoon or a waterway. So it's really site-specific. I mean, the smaller ones we do are around 1 hectare, which is about 2,500 plants. But last year we did one that was 8 hectares, which was 20,000 plants. So, you know, there's a huge difference between the smaller projects and the bigger projects.
And are these long strips of land, or are they, does it matter?
Mostly what we're finding now is with some of the new things coming out around waterways, a lot of landowners now are having to retire land along waterways. So we are finding quite a lot of them are fencing off waterways and then wanting to plant that out. But, you know, we've also had last year that bigger project with 20,000 trees. A landowner pretty much retired a whole valley with a river running through the middle of it. So we are seeing quite a lot of difference over the projects, but I'd say the majority of them are fencing off waterways and planting along them. We try to stick to a minimum of 20 metres wide, because that way it counteracts the edge effect which you would have on either side, so you have that centrepiece which will create proper habitat for bird life and insect life.
Explain the edge effect.
So on the edge of pretty much all forests, where it's usually the trees are shorter, shrubbier, the light gets in, the wind gets in, so that's not great for habitat for the bird life, and the predators can get in there easier.
Has there been much scientific research done on how birds will travel, and are you kind of tapping into that research to work out where the plantings need to be?
We don't necessarily have the option to be too picky about where our plantings go. We sort of have to work in with landowners that want to buy in. I mean, we have some great guys involved in the project in the expert advisory group, and so they've got a lot of expertise when it comes to right species selection to lure the birds in or attract the birds and hold them in the areas. If we get the corridors established, the birds will naturally come into those areas anyway, and they will bring seed with them and disperse that into the areas. So the main thing I think at this stage is to get the corridors established, get the canopy cover up, and the birds will come. And a lot of the land we're planting on too, for obvious reasons, isn't nice fertile flat land, because it's too valuable for farmers to retire that land. So as we're standing here now in this ex pine forest on a dry gravelly riverbed, you can see the plants, you know, aren't going to exactly thrive here at the start until they get some canopy cover up, and then they'll be away.
Aaron, what does it mean to you to be involved in this project?
I grew up down in the lower valley down here in Puranoa, so, and I do always had a love for trees, and so yeah, I would just like to see the community in the area that I grew up in and my kids are growing up in at the moment to, you know, get some of these nice big native forests going in the valley, whereas at the moment there's not many of them. I mean, I'd like to 50 years time come down here with kids or grandkids or whatever and show them some of the forests that we got re-established.
Okay, so just looking at this bag of seeds that we've got.
Seedlings for the project are grown just down the road at the Kohunui Marae. This is Rikita Toe, the new nursery's project manager. And this is one of the marae's trustees, Teresa Aporo.
I hide in my Kite Kohunui native nursery. Yeah, welcome, Sally. This is a collaboration with a lot of people and communities have this little dream. Started off little and it's getting bigger, but it's getting bigger because we've got a lot of community involvement.
They'll be growing 100,000 plants here for the Aorangi Restoration Trust over the next 2 to 3 years.
All of the seeds are all from the South Wairarapa, from great people's personal properties, where they'll notice that one of their kōwhai trees is seeding and it looks fantastic. They'll come here with a bag of seeds and say, would you like this? And we would say, yes, thank you very much, and have a cup of tea. 80% of our seedling is coming from the community and getting paid by cups of tea and coffee. Because we're so new with that community buy-in, it just bodes well for the future, I think.
Is it best to have seeds from the area?
It's just part of our philosophy. If we want to provide seedlings that want to grow in the South Wairarapa, which is a pretty windy place, we kind of figure, well, why don't we have it start right from the very beginning, from the seeds? Because we do know that the tree which that seed come from must have grew right in the South Wairarapa because it's growing. So we're going on a theory that its little seedling children will grow as well. So 80% of these will go to the Tonganui corridor, 20% will go for a domestic product, so we can keep our farmers happy and all that type of stuff.
Now, with the Tonganui corridor, the idea is a also to attract birds, provide food for them. So what are the plants that you've got here?
Well, harakeke is the classic. I think we've all seen the picture of the tui standing on the harakeke chomping some nectar. So a stack load of those, which is going to be great because they're also really good wind protecting and they are super strong. We've got a lot of those. We've got a lot of the classic manuka kanukas coming through. Again, that'll probably be more for the bees, but where there's bees, there's birds. And generally, such a variety. Couldn't tell you exactly which ones are going to attract the birds. We're hoping to just put a smorgasbord out there, and then they can come and choose what they like.
The nursery's part of the local iwi's much bigger plan to draw young people back to the whenua.
Whānau coming back to here, you've got to draw them back. You've got to make it exciting and inviting, and that's not easy, but once they see that it's a collaboration of whānau, hapu, iwi and all the communities around, well, that certainly looks positive.
Mary Te Pōki and her son Raihania farm sheep and cattle on a strip of land further south. They're on part of another corridor, which early Māori followed between their pā and the Moana Lake Wairarapa, a rich food source.
You know, we're nestled in between two corridors, the Tūranga Nui and our sidelings over here, and we see kereru flying between all the time. That's something we've seen in the last, I don't know, half a dozen years. And I'm hoping that we'll see much more into the future.
The Te Pōkis are part of the Tonganui Corridor project, but they've also been planting the land with natives for many years now.
I got to be honest, I was probably a little bit cynical because we've been trying to, we've been promoting planting natives for a very long time. Like Mum said, I fenced off our sidelings here, these native sidelings, and 2009, so it's 12 years ago now, and well, I went sailing for a good time in between, but when I came home in 2015, I planted natives, hundreds of natives every winter. But knowing that Clive was one of the leaders of the project, that made it for me look much better for me, because I have a lot of respect for Clive. He's supported me over the years. And knowing that other farmers are, you know, doing this for the right reasons, not just to look good or raise the value of their land, but they do believe in giving back to the whenua.
They've also been planting for many years at Palliser Ridge, a 1,500-hectare sheep and beef farm hugging Palliser Bay. The project means extra funding. It matches their vision for the farm, and they can also offset emissions and earn carbon credits.
G'day, I'm Kurt Portis, and I'm from the South Wairarapa in Purana.
So what sort of trees have you planted here, Kurt?
Yeah, so that tree there is called a taupata tree. It's a coastal tree. It can pretty much grow on concrete, that kind of tree, so we plant a lot of that. Then we have Koromiko, it's another quite coastal tree, and it would grow into a big bush one day.
It's a pretty rough environment here, isn't it? You've got the coastal winds coming through.
Oh yeah, coastal winds and the salt breeze, and so we've got to plant sort of like quite shrubbier trees to get established. We've been planting, you know, native trees for probably close to 20 years, and probably just doing little bits and pieces, and then once the Aorangi Trust said, hey look, there's going to be some funding and help to do more planting, we said, man, this is us, and if you can help us, then we'll do more.
So we're standing on a bit of a ridge overlooking the creek, and there's already a stand of native bush on the other side of this gully, and basically you want to extend the planting up the other side as well. So you're going to have a 200 metre slice of corridor running through the farm that's all planted?
Yeah, pretty much 200 to 100 metres wide corridor going pretty much through the farm. It's probably, you know, 3 kilometres up there of existing native bush, and then there's probably another couple of kilometres that we've just done. So Yeah, it's a lot of land, but you know, it's just it's land that's not unproductive for animals, really, in my view. I get all my staff involved as well, who are shepherds and stock managers. I love getting them involved because they can. It's part of the vision of the farm, and they can actually really see it, and it also makes them keep the stock out too. So if they've planted the trees, then they're like, oh, there's one sheep in there or one cattle beast, so they get that cattle beast out and make sure they look after the trees. At the end of the day, we're selling product. We're selling lamb, beef, and woolen products. And people want to buy products from farms that, are creating better biology and bird life, and farms that are improving. So I think it helps with our whole marketing story of selling our New Zealand products.
So just looking at this landscape here, what's your vision? How can you see it turning out?
Oh, I can just, we can just carry on that native bush, carry on right down this creek and then right down onto the neighbour's property. And then the neighbour will carry on. He's done a lot of native planting down there as well. And it'll carry on right down to the lake, Lake Anoki, and then it'll head around the lake and then into the Rimatuckers. So we're doing our bit, and the neighbour's doing his bit, and all the other neighbours are doing the same thing. So it's going to be incredible in 20 years, even 20 years' time, and even 50 years. It's going to be amazing.
Kurt Portis, one of the farmers involved in the Tonganui Corridor project. You also heard from Rahania Te Pūki, Ricky Te Tau, Aaron Donjus, Teresa Apuru and Clive Payton.